It's said that we understand the surface of the moon better than the deep sea, but new missions and novel submersible technology are finally shedding some light on the darkness of the deep. Now, a major international collaboration is embarking on a mission to conduct the first systematic study of life in the deepest marine habitat on Earth, ocean trenches, which are regions of the seafloor about 11,000 metres deep. This programme, known as HADES, or the Hadal Ecosystem Studies, includes the University of Aberdeen's Ocean Lab researcher, Alan Jameson, who joins us now. Hi, Alan.
Hello, how are you doing?
So, to start off with, when did we first realise that the deep sea was able to support life at all?
Well, the deep sea technically starts at around 200 metres, and I think it was in the 1800s or 1700s where a guy called Edward Forbes once said there was absolutely no chance that life could survive in the deep sea. And I think when somebody sticks their neck out and says something like that, it kind of prompted a whole wave of people to go out and continually beat that. But it wasn't until the 1950s where they actually pulled up animals that we could confirm were actually alive on the bottom at depths greater than 10,000 metres.
And if we're looking at the kind of creatures that live down there, what are the conditions that they have to deal with?
Well, first, it's obviously a complete lack of sunlight. Beyond 1,000 metres, I don't think you can even detect photons after that. The food supply is fairly low just because the majority of food comes from the surface, and the further removed you are from that, the lower the quantity is. Normally, the temperatures are between 1 and 2 degrees, and the pressure, of course, is something like 1 tonne per square centimetre, which is extraordinarily high.
So what sort of species do we see down there? I mean, I know that recently you were involved in the discovery of a giant amphipod, this sort of giant shrimp thing.
Yeah.
It seems like a lot of the species down there are pretty weird and wonderful.
Most taxa are represented in the very deepest parts, and the four main ones are amphipods, sea cucumbers, worms and bivalves and things like that. But there's an interesting thing where, despite lots of taxa being surviving at 10,000 metres plus, quite a lot of them drop out between 8,000 and 8,500, which is interesting. And we think that's just a pressure effect. So the likes of fish and decapods and things like that, they only survive to about 8,000 to 8,500.
And is it questions like that, like why do we see this drop off at that point that you're hoping to answer with HADES? What are the big questions you're hoping to answer?
Well, the thing with the HADES project is when you're looking at the very, very deep parts, the Hadal zone is not a continuation of the slopes down to the abyssal plain, because the Hadal zone is made up of trenches, big subducting trenches, and they're all isolated from one another. So it's similar to mountain ecology, high altitude. There isn't one big continuous habitat at these extreme depths. There are pockets around the Pacific. So what we're looking at is we know quite a lot about the abyssal plains, but how does that change once you start to plummet down into the trenches? The justification we're doing is there's lots of information, lots of science being done about depth-related trends, but they're missing out the bottom 45% of the depth range. So there's a huge chunk of information that we don't know there. And our overarching philosophy is that to sustain and conserve the oceans, that we need to know everything from the surface to the very deep. But you can't just study the top bit and then assume that that's fine. So somebody has to do the deep bit, and that's where we come in.
And what sort of equipment will you be using to go down that far?
Well, we have two main sampling devices. One is the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute's new ROV called Nereus, and it's capable of descending to 11,000 metres, and it has done a couple of years ago. And we'll use that to do video transects to look at what's living on the bottom, to take sediment cores and things like that. And we'll be using our own systems, which are called landers, which are like free-fall camera tripods. So they just descend through the water column and crash land on the bottom, and they use bait, so they attract in the more mobile animals that you wouldn't normally see on the ROV. We have a couple of camera systems that do that, and some traps as well. Just some very simple baited traps work surprisingly well at those depths.
So it's going to be a combination of looking at what's down there live, as it were, with cameras, but also you're going to be bringing samples back up to the surface?
Yes, I think the combination of the two is really important. Well, you have to get the samples because from various cellular and physiological studies and things like that, plus from a taxonomic level. But the reason why the Hadal biology, for example, is decades behind any other area in deep sea is because they originally, when they did it, it was nothing more than a taxonomic exercise. They didn't really look at what these animals are actually doing and what their role was in the ecosystem. So it's important to do a combination of both.
And if we're talking about the kind of challenges that life faces down there, the pressure, the darkness, how does that affect our sort of job of designing stuff to actually go down there and look at these things?
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of problems involved in this. And that's what slowed down Hadal biology over the years, was the technical challenges. But I don't believe they exist anymore. The problem is mainly two things. The extraordinarily high hydrostatic pressure at depth and coping with that. And the second thing is just the distance from the bottom to the surface. Because if you imagine you want to take a simple sediment core, if you wanted to do that off the beach, you'd just walk out and take a core. But at 10,000 metres, you need to find a ship which has enough wire to lower down, hit the bottom, back up again. And that operation itself would probably take the best part of a day. Plus, most research vessels won't carry that kind of wire. And even then, most wires will break under its own weight at that kind of depth. So this is why we use free-fall instruments to try and overcome that. So once the vehicle leaves the ship, we have no more contact with it. It just basically sinks, hits the bottom. And at the end of the experiment, we send an acoustic command to it, and it drops its weights and then floats back to the surface again. It's very complicated, very expensive business to be in.
So what exactly are you hoping to find down there?
What we're looking at is to try and challenge this perception that the very, very deep sea is some kind of stagnant, stable environment that's just kind of ecking out in existence in the dark and is of no consequence. You know, there's more and more evidence to suggest or even proven that on the deep abyssal plains, even at 4,000 or 5,000 metres, there is natural variation throughout the year. But no one's really looked on long enough timescales, and we know absolutely nothing really about the ecosystems of these deep trenches and where the food ends up. And it's very difficult to try and predict what's going to happen because these trench habitats are so unique in terms of topography. And, of course, there's subduction zones as well. So you have this huge seismic activity thing going on there as well. So, you know, what happens to the ecosystem then when these enormous mudslides cascading down the trench walls and things like that? So it's a very unique habitat.
And so it's not a case that we can really compare it to the kind of energy flow that we see up on land?
No, I mean, you know, if you look at the globe, most of the Earth is deep sea, but they're normally big, huge, vast abyssal plains. So when all of the food and the productivity in the surface starts to rain down, it will land on the seafloor more or less uniformly, whether constantly all year round or in pulses. But when it goes to the trench doesn't hold it like that because the trench is a kind of V-shaped cross-section. So theoretically, anything that comes down should get funneled along the trench axis. So therefore, it's questioning whether or not depth really matters. It's where on the trench really matters, we think. So one of the things we're trying to prove is whether or not you'll have this thing called the trench resource accumulation depth, where there's a greater amount of food on the trench axis than there are on the walls.
That's right in the very sort of the point of the V.
Yes, yeah. So basically all the food coming down will get funneled towards the bottom, whereas on the abyssal plains it would just lie sort of uniformly.
Great. Well, thanks, Alan. That's Alan Jameson from the Ocean Lab at the University of Aberdeen.
Lifting the lab coat on the world's best science, the Naked Scientists.